This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's Porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Well, we're getting down to the end of the season here, but we're going to be finishing strong. And I should mention that Mike is out on vacation this week, so it'll just be me at the top and the bottom of the episode. But you'll hear from him during our conversation with our special guest today. Today, we have an episode with confessions all about freelancing and the various hardships that arise when you're working for yourself, but are reliant on clients and even agencies to keep the lights on. I actually started my career in tech as a freelance designer and front-end developer, so these confessions hit pretty close to home. I did eventually build a small design and development agency, and we ended up landing clients such as Scholastic and General Electric. But we went through those growing pains of shedding our old clients in favor of new, higher paying ones. It's a painful process, and it's not uncommon to early stage startups who have to shed some of those early clients in favor of better fitting ones as they find product market fit. So whether you freelanced or not, there's definitely something in this episode for you. So let's get into it. Welcome to Rocketship.fm.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We are your hosts, Michael Sacca.
And I'm Mike Belsito.
Like I mentioned, today's episode is all about the struggles of freelancing. And we've brought on the perfect guest to help us sort through two of these confessions today, none other than my friend Amy Hood of Hoodspa. Amy and her sister Jen started out working for a Penny Saver magazine, but they are now doing work for Disney, Target, ESPN, Red Bull, Nike, and so many more amazing brands. So let's welcome Amy Hood to the show.
So my twin sister and I, Jen, started Hoodspa. We're a brand and type design studio out of Orange County, California. The redheaded stepchild of LA. It's like, I hate telling people I'm from Orange County because they immediately have in their mind, like, whether it's Arrested Development or the OC or, you know, The Hills, they have like in their mind what we are. And I'm like, we're so not that, but we do love it here. And yeah, we do a lot of branding for, you know, entertainment and consumer goods. Like, we've done some Disney stuff and some cannabis stuff. I mean, we're really all over the board, and we make typefaces too. So we like a little bit of everything.
All right, let's get into our first confession. One we're calling, I never planned on this.
I never planned to be a freelancer. If you had asked me when I was younger what I was looking for in a job, a constant state of panic would not have been at the top of my list. I had a steady job, and then COVID hit, and I found myself without any income for the first time since I can remember. I started picking up work whenever I could find it, and before I knew it, I woke up one morning and realized, oh wow, I'm a full-time freelancer now. I'm a designer, a bit of a jack of all trades, but I generally prefer product design work. This came in handy when I was first finding work to take on, but I'm definitely feeling stretched thin these days. That's not what I'm struggling with though. At least I don't think so. Here's where I could use some help. I've settled into two clients that make up about 70% of my income. In the last few months, I've had some larger clients approach me, and I've managed to negotiate a much higher rate with them, but the projects are smaller and a little sporadic right now. Now that I know what I'm worth, I want to go back to my stable clients and ask for an increased rate, but I'm a little nervous they'll say no and hire someone else. I feel stuck because I know I could be earning more, but I also don't want to lose a reliable client. Any advice on how to approach this? Is it realistic to charge all my clients the same amount? Am I just being greedy?
So Amy, when you first heard this, what was going through your head?
Well, you know, at Hoodspud, Jen and I started out of necessity as well. We never thought we would work for ourselves so early because we started our company when we were 25, which is, I would never encourage anyone to do that, I don't think. You know, I would say go work for somebody else, see how to do it right. And we had worked for somebody else, but they weren't necessarily doing it right per se. So we had to learn a lot of stuff the hard way. And at first, you know, much like this person, we were taking on anything we could get just because we had to pay the bills and Orange County is expensive. So any and all comers, we were like, you know, we were doing trade, whatever rates they could afford. And, you know, eventually we ended up just like this person where we had two clients that were our big cash cow clients. One specifically was like 40 to 50% of our income. And we realized we basically work in-house for this person now. The way that they were dictating to us and, you know, requiring us to just work like long, late hours, unreasonable deadlines, stuff like that. And that's the whole reason you get out of working for somebody else. That's one of the benefits is that you get to create your boundaries. And, you know, so when you start to realize that, oh, I'm just working for someone else again, that's when you have to start making your backup plan. Always make your backup plan before you jump, though. I know a lot of people say like, oh, I just quit my job because I really wanted to go freelance. And I think this is the only way I can do it. And for some people, great. But I feel like if you can get that safety net, like do that first, right? So we started just like courting other clients, working a little bit longer and a little bit later so that we would have a cushion to then have the discussion with the client like, hey, like we're in high demand now. You know, when you first approached us, we were just starting our business and we had really reasonable rates. But now, you know, we've got so much demand that, you know, we're increasing our rates and it's still competitive. I always say that. I always, like she said, they don't want to be greedy. And I'm the same way. Like I want to be fair. But at the same time, you know, so just check with maybe some peers and say like, hey, is this a fair going rate? If so, then just tell them, hey, this is a fair rate. And I'd love to keep you on at this new rate. But if, you know, if that's not feasible in your budget, I totally understand. And maybe you can then, you know, refer them to a friend who's a junior designer who this would be a great rate for. So you're not leaving this client in the lurch, but you're also making room for bigger and better clients, which you have to do as you grow. Otherwise, you just stagnate. And I mean, for us, like even recently, you know, it's hard when you want reliability. We get really nervous and we feel like we have to say yes to a lot of things just to make sure that we're always busy. But then when the big projects come in, like when Disney called, they had three projects at once that they needed like within a month. And we were already so busy. And I was like, I don't care. We'll sleep next year. You know, we're doing this. And then we learned like you have to leave the room for those dream projects because that's what you're working towards, you know?
I'd be curious when you went back to your first client, like your big whale,
How did that conversation go with them? Did they let you go? Did they give you a higher rate?
Well, luckily, already Jen and I are really good about being retrospective. We had a business mentor who, you know, make goals, write things down, was always asking us questions about, you know, our profit loss statement. Like, we weren't just letting this thing go on autopilot. We had a goal of where we needed to be. And I think that's really important, is knowing, like, what kind of projects do I want to get? Which of my clients in the last year have been the most profitable? Like, which industries have been the most profitable? And start looking at it. When you see that your problem client is also not paying a going rate and they stress you out, there's no win there. It's good if you lose them, actually. So it's like, make the rates to the point where it makes it worth it to you, so that at least the pay is there, because the people and the project is not there potentially, right? And that's like a great, I forgot who said that, but the three P's, everyone always mentions it: people, pay, project. If you can get 2 out of 3, that's really good. If you're only getting 1 out of 3, maybe it's time to like either up that rate to where it's worth the hassle, or just try to offload them. So with this client, we went in and we kind of already knew, like, we were both like very antagonistic towards the end. Like, he was trying to get all he could get out of us, and we were trying to stand our ground. And so when we set up the meeting, before we could even say anything, he was like, "Oh, I'm glad you're here, because I just wanted to let you know that we found a new design agency." So he kind of saw the writing on the wall and kind of was a bit of an asshole, and just was like, "We're letting you go." And I'm like, "Great, because this was the worst job I've ever had, or the worst client I've ever had." You know?
Today, do you still get clients like that? Or do you guys kind of have the ability to avoid that situation?
You know what? It's so funny. You get really good at reading the red flags, and it's kind of like dating, where you can't put your finger on why, but you just know, like, oh, bad sign. Like, there's so many hilarious TikToks. It's like women who don't speak to their adult children, red flag. There's like all these really funny specific, like, doesn't have 2 pillows, doesn't have a, you know, bed frame, like all these hilarious red flags. But you do start to kind of get this sixth sense of, like, you know, what's going to be good for you. But having your goals of, like, is it in the industry we want to specialize in? For us now, that's like consumer goods and entertainment. Is it the rate we want? Does this person seem cool after our, like, 2, you know, meetings? Or are they nickel and diming and already, like, trying to bring in 10 people to make a decision? Like, is it already a stressful process? It may not be the right fit.
Looking forward for this person, right? This person's in their first or second year of freelancing, looking forward for them. Do you feel like you have control of your time? Have you, and that you're not working crazy hours anymore? Or do you still kind of do that you go through periods or cycles of that?
Oh yeah. Michael, you caught me in a time. I was like, oh yeah, I have this podcast this morning, and I'm like releasing a font tomorrow. And it's been like just guns blazing for the last week of, like, you know, everything has to get done. Everything's so stressful, you know? So it's like, no matter what, you'll have those like random months. Even if you're a really good planner, something always goes wrong. Like, whether it's, you know, your personal life, things you can't control, things your client can't control, COVID, you know, like, there's so many things that are out of our control. So it's like just trying to control what you can. And honestly, just being, you know, honest with your clients. I found that if you have like the right clients, like, they're pretty understanding if you're just honest about it. Like, hey, I want to get you the best outcome. Like, something came up. Can we get another week to like work on these concepts or whatever? I've almost 99% of my client has come back and said, of course, you know, unless you're like emailing them like 5 minutes before it's due and saying, hey, can I have another week?
Right.
But, you know, try to give it like 24 hours so they don't feel forgotten, you know, or stood up.
So there's some hope.
Oh yeah.
At the end of the tunnel.
There is.
All right. We'll be right back after a quick break. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And, backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
All right, we're back and ready for our second confession. And this is one we've all lived through as freelancers. One we're calling, I Can't Handle the Sweatshop.
I started my career working at various branding agencies. Also, as a woman, I got sexually harassed a lot at a few agencies. I couldn't do anything about it. I knew I couldn't go to HR to talk about it, especially when I wasn't a creative director yet. I just didn't want to deal with the politics. I decided to be freelance so I don't have to put up with an environment. Plus, I'd realized I could be doing the same type of work I was doing for agencies for myself. So today I'm still working as a hired gun for agencies, but I come in as a hired gun and then I leave. I also get to work on a lot of different projects and brands. I like being able to work on different projects throughout the year. It keeps my skills strong. Plus, I get to see how both good and bad agencies function. The downside to this is that I'm working sweatshop hours. The agencies that I've been working for lately have been more stressed than usual. And when that happens, they act like they own you. The day isn't done until the work is done, and there's always another revision to do or a new idea to explore. For me, my time is more valuable. I'd like to be able to have more free time to work on my own projects and do other things without being stuck on an agency's time clock. I've been finding it really hard to maintain my health and work reasonable hours. It's not my fault they're all terrible at managing client expectations. Anyway, this is all I've ever done. I don't have strong sales skills or a network to build my own client list, and I'm not even sure where to start. Maybe I'm just burned out. Is this just how it is everywhere, or is the grass really greener somewhere else?
All right, Amy, what did you make of this one?
That's tough. I mean, I've heard so many horror stories about agencies, and I used to work at a print house where we ran like 3 magazines, and it was a similar, always stressful, always trying to hit the next print deadline, you know, trying to pump out 3 magazines. There's not enough people, not enough designers, not enough salespeople. So I kind of feel that. But I found that agencies are a lot of times can be like that, especially the bigger ones. They think because they have the name, they can push you around. And even big companies, you'd be surprised. I actually like working with mid-level. Small companies, their money is almost too precious because it's their money, and they can be really timid and fearful about decisions instead of making the right decision. Middle companies usually have ready cash flow. The person who's giving you the changes or making the decisions isn't necessarily, it's not coming out of their pocketbook. But big companies, man, they think they just run things and they can just treat you like, you know, it's wild. So I, you know, even on some of those, the previous question, it's like, is it worth it? It's like making a list of the agencies that are treating you well and going back to those people for work. But that, you know, as soon as you have an experience with an agency where it's like, this was not good for my mental health, remembering that, write it down if you have to. Yeah. I find that writing things down is really helpful because then you're leaving yourself open for when the good project comes along and you have the mental bandwidth, right? It's like, if you're burnt out, you're not doing your best work anyway, and you're already on that hair trigger of like ready to be annoyed instead of maybe like ready to give a little bit more mercy, even if it's not deserved, you know? And that is a lot of freelancing is just like, you know, they a lot of times don't understand what they're hiring you for. That's why they're hiring you. And it's a lot of just like building trust, you know? So if you can like give yourself that time and space, but yeah, I think business journaling has been like a lifesaver for me.
So you guys started out in a similar situation. I'd be curious, how did you purposely approach moving out of this, like the agency grind and into the industries that you wanted to be hired in when you didn't have any experience early on in those industries?
That's so tough, but it really is all about people. So they were saying they don't have the network. invest in your community, like Dribbble. You know, I met so many people on Dribbble, and at the beginning there was Dribbble meetups, you know, so Dribbble meetups. I used to make fun of conferences when I was working at the print house, because we were like the grunty, like blue collar, like making nothing. We're like, what do you need a freaking conference for? Like, just do the work and quit complaining, you know, like grew up in Kentucky. And then like I went to one and I was like, I'm so inspired, you know, like. And so like giving yourself the time to find the community and the friends that you can not only commiserate with, but like vocalize your goals to, so that they hold you accountable. The worst is being an island and kind of letting yourself kind of slide or get by, you know. It's like have friends that'll like push you to like be your best you, you know. So like honestly, Twitter, I didn't know anyone. And in Orange County at the time, there was not a design scene whatsoever. Everyone thought we had to go to LA. So I started meeting people on Twitter. I just looked up designers that I admired, followed them, started interacting with them, not about design, just about like TV and movies and like personal things. And then when you do, then, you know, you become friends. And then if you do have a question, there's like a rapport there where they feel invested in you and they're actually willing to help you with these questions. And I went to a Twitter meetup with like Josh Hemsley and Mark Hemian and Aubrey, I can't remember his last name right now, but I was telling them what I was charging and they were like, what are you doing? Stop it. And I was like, this isn't a good rate. I had just got done making $12 an hour as a, you know, at this print house working like 40 to 60 hour weeks, you know? And I was just like, more like 60 hour weeks. And they were like, you know, this is, you know, so just being transparent with people will help them want to give you advice. Maybe instead of like saying, what do I charge? That can sometimes be like off-putting. But if you just tell them what you're up to, they'll usually give you some feedback.
What I love about what you're saying too is that, you know, you're talking about this networking, but some people get so caught up with like, I don't like networking, you know, because they think of networking means you're going to an event and putting your hand out and passing business cards or, but that's not, I mean, you talked about amazing examples with just Twitter alone. I mean, and these other communities, conferences. And so this person making this confession, they felt like they weren't a networker. They also felt like they weren't great on the sales end, but it sounds like if you could build that, if you just make friends, those friends can kind of help you with things that you feel like you might not necessarily have strengths in. Is that right?
That's so true. Like, and people will say, like, we used to teach a class at Laguna College of Art and Design, and it was professional practices, which is like, you know, how to like get work, how to be a good employee, how to, you know, all those things for, you know, these graphic design students. And we would make them go to meetups but to prepare them, because they were all introverts, we would say, have your intro ready of who you are, what you do, and what you're working on. Because the worst is when you go somewhere and you say like, hey man, like, what's your name? I'm Amy. They tell your name, you say, oh, like, what do you do? And they're like, oh, nothing. I'm just like, I'm just a student. You know, and you're immediately like, oh, you don't have any trust in this person, you know, as for what their skills are. So it's like, go in saying like, I'm Amy. I have my own creative agency. It's called Chutzpah. We love doing entertainment work. And actually right now we're getting more into types, you know, like we're making fonts and things like that. Like, so that's, you know, help them have a reason to remember you and be invested.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. All right, so I hope you enjoyed these two confessions, and a huge thanks to Amy Hood of Chutzpah, that's H-O-O-D-Z-P-A-H, for those curious to learn more. They have a fantastic book and course all about freelancing, so if you'd like to learn more for yourself, I highly recommend it. Now, our big takeaway, and luckily, I think there's a really common thread between these two confessions, which is that no one is going to advocate for your happiness except for you. And that becomes especially obvious when you're freelancing and really working for yourself. Now, that might come in the form of pay or work-life balance, but only you can create that for yourself. I think it's important to know what we're worth and not to let clients or customers drag us down by either paying us too little or taking up our precious time. It's often the clients and customers that pay the least who make the most noise and take up the most of our time. It's okay to outgrow clients and customers and take a risk to move up to that next level of pay or pricing tier. Just make sure you have your bases covered. Take it at your own pace, but don't let their needs, that is your client or your customers, come before your own. If your skills have improved and people are willing to pay more, and that could go for your product as well, make space for those clients and customers that are willing to pay that new rate. I'll tell you a quick story from my own experience. I once had a client who bought out the majority of my time at $60 an hour, which was three times more than I was currently making. And I had this one client that was just steady work. Every week I had something coming in. But I was so desperate to quit, I was so frustrated that I just wrote them midweek and just said, pay me $60 an hour or I'm not working for you anymore. And look, unsurprisingly, they were not happy and we never worked together again. In fact, I don't even think we spoke again. But I did go on to find more clients who were willing to pay me that $60 an hour. And eventually our rate was $150 an hour. But the way I went about it, it was completely wrong. I should have given a time frame for the transition. I should have given them enough time to find a new contractor, just you would with any job, just that basic respect. So it was a big lesson that I learned. So don't be like me, but definitely work to get paid what you're worth and make sure that clients or customers aren't taking advantage of you or your time. So that's all this week. We'll see you once again on Thursday for another episode of Workplace Confessions right here on Rocketship.fm. Thank you so much for listening to Rocketship.fm. It is your support that keeps the show going. If you can, take a second and leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps out the show so much. We're also part of the Podglomerate Network. And if you'd like to listen to more great shows from the Podglomerate, go to thepodglomerate.com to see the full show listings.
Rocketship.fm is produced in partnership with Product Collective, a community for product people. Go to productcollective.com and get access to our weekly newsletter, live video interviews, Slack community, product job board, and a whole lot more. Again, just go to productcollective.com.